College football nerds here talking LSU and Ed Orgeron parting ways, and it's a light week for us. If you look at the schedule coming up, not a great schedule. Doesn't mean something crazy won't happen, but the college football gods drop some content on our lap, and here we are talking about it. We're going to do two videos. One video, this one, is talking more about kind of what happened and why we weren't super high on Ed Orgeron to begin with, and going through some comments we made when he was initially hired. And then the second video is going to be us discussing who we think are reasonable replacements for LSU. Maybe not going through the whole hot board, but a quick discussion on that. So what we're going to do is we're going to walk through, we did a video and I'll link it in the description, but we're going to walk through three segments that we had in that video and kind of talk about how we were fairly prophetic, if you want to say that. We are known to take a victory lap or two here, and we want to walk through those. So here's the first cut, Josh talking about Ed Orgeron. It
seemed really obvious to me that Oliva was going to be way too willing to listen to all the voices around him and the big boosters that love the Cajun guy that's won some games. We talked a lot about how there was all this baffling hype about how Orgeron had turned things around after that Auburn game because they're putting up 40 points a game, when in truth they were playing three of, it was, you know, all rushing defenses worth ranked 100th or worse in the country, and all LSU could do was run the ball. And I think it's horribly misplaced. You know, maybe I'll be proven wrong with time. I think he may have a good year or two because he's a good motivator, but Orgeron's struggle has never been motivation and coaching Monday through Friday during the season. Orgeron has always struggled heavily with organizing offseason, trying to schedule meetings, recruiting schedules. You know, Orgeron may be a great recruiter, but he's not going to be personally responsible for recruiting. You know, Saban does not have many recruits that he recruits directly. His assistants do it. Saban sets a schedule. Saban helps evaluate prospects. Saban assigns recruiters to a player, and all he does is come in and close. Orgeron in that administrative role is just not what he is really best at. And I really worry that this hire could be a major blunder that they would regret tremendously about 3 years down the road.
Josh, I think that obviously this was a lot that you saw coming, and it was, I think anybody could really see it if they didn't get wrapped up in the moment of, like you said, the local guy kind of done good and one of us, you know, winning some games. To me, I want you to talk through maybe what you saw that kind of fit with what you were talking about. So what you saw over the course of these few years with Orgeron, was it more the wild off the field stuff that we heard rumors of or saw pictures of, or was it stuff inside that football administration building, inside his things that showed up on game day that gave you the bigger concern that you feel fit with what you were saying here in this clip many years ago?
So this clip is from November of 2016. It has, at the moment, 542 views. And I think we wanted to step back and note that a lot of the problems that existed with Orgeron weren't just hindsight. This was us sort of starting our YouTube channel when we were first venturing into this space. And a lot of my comments were based off things that I had read about and heard about from podcasts, from work Stephen Godfrey did. You can look up the word like Meat Market, about his time at Ole Miss, stuff I'd read about his time at USC. There was a particular pattern with Ed Orgeron and how he runs a program. There was a pattern of long-term dysfunction and overreaction. And one of the things that he was really bad at Ole Miss was balancing when things turned poorly and taking it in stride, building a system that he trusted and sort of, you know, trusting the process, so to speak. Like he always reacts very emotionally to situations. And, you know, one thing we were wrong about in the video is we said, you know, things could blow up in 3 years. Well, it turned out it was arguably four. He kind of got a pass for COVID, but I always thought he could have a good year or two. I mean, he is a good motivator. If you give him a talented program with good coordinators, he can get the guys up and he can be a pretty good rah-rah guy for a team that's doing well. The problem for Orgeron, and it was really well documented, is what happens when you have a year where you're not the most talented team in the country and you're not going to win every game and you're not going to win the national title. Are you going to be able to get those guys to train like they want to train, like you want them to train, practice like you want them to practice? And it was particularly hard for him, I think, coming off a year where they were tremendously successful, to maintain the sort of intensity they needed in the offseason program and do what they needed to do.
All right, next segment. You're a businessman at that point. When you're an AD of a giant school like that, you're managing millions of dollars and they're under your purview, and you need to make business decisions, not what makes you feel good at night decisions. And sometimes that means hiring the jerk. It worked out for Alabama, and it's going to work out for other teams in the future. And really, this kind of fits in with what you said in your initial point, but more along the lines of, like, it's not just recruiting. It's not just coaching. It's not just putting together a staff. It's having the understanding of being able to perform and produce on Saturday, but also fit in a room with boosters. Also understand that you don't need to hit on administrators' wives, and understand that, like, you are a CEO, not just in the term like we like to think about with a CEO coach, but you are a CEO of an organization. Who you are projecting outward could be used against you, not only in a court of law, but also on the recruiting trail. So maybe, Josh, some of the stuff we did see off the field, including recent comments about him on, you know, a radio show, or the things that came out today about having, you know, girlfriends with the kids, you know, at practice and things like that, whether they're true or not, a lot of this sort of speaks to that other side of not being that business coach, right?
It does. One thing we noted on Twitter, he went on a radio show and made a comment about how, you know, there's holes in the bio for people like you. And he was kind of vaguely threatening a caller that had crank called the radio show. Now, the caller was off base. The thing that I think a lot of people miss is this is a guy making $9 million a year. And you're going on your coach's show as a representative of the university, making almost $10 million a year, and you get a crank caller. Now, Orgeron had been coached for about 2 years now on how he needed to handle himself from a PR perspective. The administration had about had it with him. They'd had, as I understand it, numerous meetings with him to talk about how he presented himself, and he still takes the bait every time. And if you are in that position, if you're a representative of a large organization, people are going to come at you in nasty, ridiculous ways, and you can't respond to it by talking about someone's sissy blue shirt and calling them out to fight. Like, you have to represent your university in a different manner. I don't think Orgeron ever understood his role from that perspective. And I think once he won a championship, it really derailed from him understanding that he needed to build something and being proud to be in the position to build, to him owning the brand and sort of losing the humility to say, I'm representing something. I am not something myself. And that's just something you have to understand when you're in that position. You have that kind of salary and that kind of promotional capacity for a brand as a well-known head coach.
Next clip.
That point is, there is no loyalty from any of these coaches. You know, the coaches, especially coordinators, are going to leave at the drop of a hat for a better program. And so you have to understand the level of the game you're playing at. There's no loyalty by the coaches. There needs to be no loyalty to you as a hiring body to make sure that you have the best qualified guy you can have in a position. Because if you don't, you're going to be in rough shape and everybody else is going to snatch up the better guys. And if you're relying on coordinators the way I think LSU is going to try to do to be successful, either the coordinators aren't going to be very good, or somebody's going to hire them to be a head coach.
And I'll take this one because we're running out of time. But Josh, I think you made a really good point here that, like, there is very limited loyalty when there's opportunities at a higher level to make $5 to $7 to $10 million as a head coach. And we saw that with 2019, and it was good. And this is kind of where LSU fans struggle with, like, yeah, it's tough that we kind of saw this was a potential train wreck coming and we're upset because, you know, we're having to fire another coach, but also we got some hardware. So I think your point was really, really solid here in that, like, look, you might be able to rely on coordinators, but one, they're not going to be loyal to you. They're not like what Clemson's got in Venables, where there's somebody that's going to ride with you forever because of the type of head coach you are. But it's a great place to go to get your brand out there, build your brand, and go on to the next thing. So I think that was really good. Last clip, and I'm going to let you tackle this one.
I think they should be good by default for a year or two. I've still questioned. I can't underemphasize how fast they were a disaster at Ole Miss, how quickly they became so bad. I mean, they had winning seasons for several years before he got hired, and then he wins, I think, 5 games in 3 years. I know I interrupted you, but I'm just awaiting the John L. Smith moment here. I am really worried there will be a John L. Smith sort of expectation, you know, interest, and they get to the beginning of the season and you realize what the hell have these guys been doing for 8 months?
Yeah. So, Josh, do you feel like this is a John L. Smith moment, or maybe they caught it before that really happened?
I mean, I think at some level you have to say it's already there, right? 5-5 last year. Now, they beat Florida. It seems like their season may not be necessarily a total train wreck. It felt like they were heading that direction. But the biggest takeaway that I want people to have, and the reason we ran this clips, is, you know, 2016 we were noting, okay, he comes in, has a binder, says he wants to hire these coordinators. We guessed even before he was hired, he probably had a good shot. Kiffin would take a head coaching job. He did at FAU. We talked about how he might have good coordinators and they do well, but you can't rely on that long term. And that's exactly what worked with Aranda and with Brady. The problem with all of this was his inability to take losses at those positions, to be realistic in, am I going to get Kiffin to start with? If I get a coordinator, am I going to be able to retain them? Am I going to be able to build a program that can succeed when those guys come in and out? And what you ended up with ultimately is a guy that was fairly successful for a few years, won a national title, you know, got to the top of the game. But I do think the past couple of years kind of have been a John L. Smith moment, in a total disaster that was a media circus. Everyone was following the program and then fell off in a way that absolutely no one saw coming, with a team with a lot of expectations. LSU is a storied program. They have the ability, like you were saying at the end of the clip, to be extremely successful. I think they're going to be more successful in the future with whoever they hire. But it was just really fascinating to me that even way back in 2016, a lot of the exact things that happened we saw coming. And I think that says a lot about Ed Orgeron and the situations he created and the sort of character and person that he is.
Yeah, and just kind of my parting shot on this. Like I mentioned Saban in that clip in 2016 because everybody thinks they want a head coach to be the kind of guy they want to get a beer with, but it's the opposite. You want a robot that's miserable. You want a robot who comes in and does his thing and he just cares about football. He's got no personality. He just cares about football. He's got enough personality to recruit and maybe get some good coaches to work for him, but not so much of the rah-rah, because what happens is, when you get the really emotional coach, cough, PJ Fleck, cough, things can be good and they're great, but you rely so much on that emotion that things fall off in a hurry and things snowball and unravel. We saw that with Les Miles too, that you can't have your entire organization living and dying on keeping that perfect balance of everybody happy, because once it starts unraveling, then guys start quitting, checking out, or saying, you know, I'm packing it in for the draft and things like that. So y'all check out our other video that's coming, if it's not out yet, where we discuss some of these options for LSU and talk about how we think that, look, this is a good thing for your program, and you're gonna get better because of this, and you got some hardware in the process. College Football Nerds here, talking kind of part two of our discussion on LSU and Ed Orgeron. And we want to go through the list of maybe potential candidates, or, you know, candidates that we think would be a good fit. But we want to remind y'all, because it's kind of like a prediction of a game. Let us know in the comments who you think should be the candidate. Give us a reasonable candidate that you think would go there, and then maybe a dream candidate that probably won't go there. Okay, Josh, I'm going through this list. There's a list of candidates on Tiger Droppings. That's right, y'all. We read Tiger Droppings in SEC Rant, which means you should probably link our stuff there. We'd love that to happen. And they've got their list runs the gamut, as they kind of do. At first, Josh, I want to kind of talk about the ones that maybe would be a great fit there, but they would never, like, they probably wouldn't touch LSU organizationally. And to me, the two that jump out are Hugh Freeze and Lane Kiffin. Now, I think both of these coaches would be absolutely deadly there, but aren't these coaches kind of what represent what LSU needs to get away from and wash the Ed O sort of session off of them?
Two different problems, but yeah, there's issues with both of them. First, Hugh Freeze is still toxic. Liberty hired him as a head coach when a lot of people wouldn't touch him. There was a lot of rumor that Alabama wanted to hire him as an offensive coordinator and that he was blocked before he took that job at Liberty. And there's a lot more going on at LSU than just letting go Ed Orgeron and trying to turn around the player base. Because, yeah, that's a problem. And Hugh Freeze had an issue where he lost the team in his final days at Ole Miss. I think people kind of forget that aspect of it. But this is a guy that was fired because he was calling escorts on a university-issued phone. LSU is under Title IX investigations. LSU is under NCAA investigations. Hugh Freeze committed NCAA violations while at Ole Miss. I don't think LSU, with everything going on administratively, can or will touch him. And I'm not sure the SEC front office would allow anyone in the SEC to hire him, even if he wanted to. So he's just kind of off the board. And then Kiffin is an offensive genius. Flat out. He's matured tremendously. He's a better head coach than he was before. But the problem with him is you've got a guy that has not shown the ability over time to hold a program together administratively. He's not shown the ability to make sure he recruits and develops players with depth, to make sure he keeps buy-in in the program, he keeps the guys on the right track, doing the right thing. He's been successful now a year and a half in at Ole Miss. Now he's got a Heisman caliber quarterback. You can talk about whether that's a pro for Kiffin, which I think it is, that because Corral wasn't the same guy before he was there, or is that something he just walked into? But when you consider that LSU's problem right now, to a large extent, is buy-in and administrative, you know, functioning, I think it makes it really hard to bring in a coach that doesn't have a great track record in that particular area.
And there's other coaches who are, I think, really good, but maybe a little bit too early. Mel Tucker's going to be a hot name this year. He might even fall into the Southern Cal job, which I don't think is as good of a job as LSU. And there's a lot of rumor. Josh Pate touched on this, and it makes a lot of sense that all the agents of all the top potential coaches were waiting for this job to open up to not only, you know, have a shot at the better job, but to use it as leverage for USC. I think Mel Tucker is a guy that's probably going to get that next tier job, although Michigan State has got a pretty good deal going on up there. But what about some of these other guys, Josh, like Matt Campbell, Luke Fickell, guys that have been mentioned for years for the next, even let's throw Cristobal in there. Do those feel like one of those would be a top first pick for LSU, or are those also guys that we always hear about, but really LSU wouldn't pull the trigger on them?
Every one of these coaches has to be evaluated individually. One of the things I always hate is you just say, oh, here's this group of coaches. What do we think of the group? I mean, every coach is different. Matt Campbell in particular, if you look at his coaching tree, he was Bowling Green, Mount Union, Bowling Green, Toledo, Iowa State. The problem with Campbell is he has never shown the ability to recruit. I think right now, we looked this up and I don't have the number in front of me, but they're like, what, the 60s in recruiting? He's had a lot of success at Iowa State. He had 8-win seasons 2017, 2018, 9-win season in 2020. It has not in any way translated into elevating the overall talent level of the program. Yes, they have a few NFL caliber guys this year. They're older players, but they're going to cycle out, and there's no indication that they've managed to recruit such that they have high-level athletes behind them to take them to yet another level. It seems like they're stuck in a 9-win ceiling. I don't think that's the guy you necessarily want at LSU. He's got no experience running a P5 program. And this is something you'll hear from me as a theme. I do not like ever hiring a P5 head coach at a major program that does not have some level of significant coaching experience and exposure to how to run a P5 program. Because so much about being a head coach is building this recruiting apparatus, tutoring apparatus, nutrition, players meetings, all that junk. That's a lot of the job. And Campbell, as good as he is, doesn't have experience with that. The more interesting one to me is the other one you named, and that's Luke Fickell. Unlike Campbell, Luke Fickell does have exposure to that. And I think, to me, Luke Fickell is almost your home run reasonable hire. Fickell was at Ohio State for several years. He knows how you grow in a major program. He was a co-defensive coordinator for 5 years at Ohio State. He knows how to recruit. And you bring a guy in with a tough-nosed personality, or a guy that's known as having being a tough coach that builds a program by building strength of character, and you fix a lot of the stuff that Ed Orgeron does. I mean, to your point, you want the boring, angry guy, and that's what Fickell is. Only Fickell has experience with championship-level programs, and so he checks, in my view, every box from what you need at LSU. I think Fickell is, in my view, the best reasonable candidate for this position.
If Fickell, somebody who's been exposed to high-level programs, is up on the list, shouldn't Billy Napier also be on that list?
Yeah, Billy Napier is an interesting one, and I think he is pretty high on it. I know a lot of LSU fans are aware of him because he's Louisiana, but he's an offensive coordinator at Clemson for a bit. It didn't really work out, but he was really young. But he's bounced around a lot of places, and spent time at Alabama as a receivers coach. Was at Arizona State. So he's a guy that has the pedigree. He's had the success at Louisiana. He's built some connections in Louisiana. I know he's not coaching at an LSU level, so he's not recruiting in an LSU level, but you still build connections with high school coaches, and he's done that because they still are recruiting those same programs. You just maybe going to get a slightly better player from the same school you already have a relationship with. So Billy Napier makes a lot of sense. My concern with Bill Napier is he's in your fourth year as a head coach. He's been really successful in Louisiana, but it was mainly that last year that was a COVID year, and I'm not sure how much of that was a flash in the pan. I don't think LSU fans would be very excited about that hire. I think he could be rather successful, but I think he would be viewed as a guy that would make you in the conversation for a conference title most years. I don't think most people would view him as a guy that potentially elevates you as a constant playoff contender at the end of the season.
I'm going to touch on a few that I think are long shots on this list, but I don't think they're even in the stratosphere of being considered. James Franklin, Lincoln Riley, for whatever reason, his name is bouncing around. I don't understand why Lincoln Riley would go from Oklahoma, where he's got a pretty easy path to the playoffs now and is coming into the SEC, but he's got his own sort of recruiting region. To me, there's no benefit there for going to LSU. That might offend some LSU fans, and I know LSU has its, lock on that state of Louisiana, but in terms of recruiting, but I don't see why Lincoln Riley leaves Oklahoma to go anywhere but the NFL, and he feels like an NFL guy to me. James Franklin's not leaving. He's another one. Like, I don't think he's leaving Penn State. Like, Penn State, it's the Urban Meyer thing. Urban Meyer went to Ohio State and saw that, like, his first year, he went 12-0. They were on probation. He went 12-0. I think they played one ranked team. Like, Penn State, you can kind of work something out like that in the Big Ten, although it's in a tougher division. Jimbo Fisher's not coming to LSU. I'm not sure that you want him. The big one that LSU fans are going to talk about, Josh, and I'll let you touch on this a little bit, Joe Brady. I might eat my words here, but Josh, Joe Brady's not coming to LSU.
The reality for most of the names you just named are they're at tier one programs, meaning a top 15 program. Historically, coaches from top 15 programs that are not on probation do not leave for any other program, period. If they are great coaches, they make that team into a championship caliber team. Otherwise, they coach there until they're let go. It just doesn't happen. The most you're going to end up with is being flirted with to get that guy raised at his current program. Joe Brady is unique because he's at the Carolina Panthers and he's an offensive coordinator. He's not a head coach. The problem with Brady, I think, is twofold. One, a lot of people really prefer to be in the pros because there's a lot less stuff you have to do. I think he likes coaching football. I think he's a great offensive mind. And if you're in the pros, you can just do that all day. You don't have to deal with tutors. You don't have to deal with recruiting. You can just be a football coach. And I think you have to bear in mind with Brady, he has a lot of the same problems we were talking about earlier with his exposure level, right? It was William and Mary. He was a grad assistant at Penn State for a couple years. Then he was 2 years at the Saints before he goes 1 year at LSU and then right back into the pros. So in the past 5 years, he spent 1 year in the college game. His experience, at least meaningful experience, has actually been as a pro coach. I think he's going to take the pro track. I think he's aware if he continues to be successful, he will be considered for a head coaching position in the NFL. And most people will tell you that an NFL head coaching position is just preferable to a college one. It's frankly, it's an easier, lower stress job. So I don't think Joe Brady is very likely to make the switch back to the college game. Could be wrong, but it seems like a weird fit for him. And I can't see any reason why he'd want to do it.
And I'm just remembering now or thinking that we've got a lot of Big Ten fans here that are probably going to be upset about what I said about Franklin. But I do think... I think if we're being honest with ourselves, your path to a national championship at Penn State is going to be easier than it is in the SEC West. It just is. You have to beat, I mean, I know you're not going to be able to recruit maybe as well, but you have to beat Ohio State to get to the playoffs. You're going to have to beat two Ohio States and some other like pretty good 10-win type teams on the way to the playoffs in the
Yeah, and I almost commented on this earlier. Like, I think you're going to get a lot of pushback from people noting LSU has some of, if not the most fertile, dedicated recruiting ground in the country to build a program, and that's really attractive to a lot of people. They have a lot of financial resources. And, I mean, Penn State's schedule is by no means a cakewalk, but I think to your point, playing Alabama, Auburn, Arkansas, Ole Miss now with Kiffin, having to face Georgia, Florida,
Oklahoma,
playing
Texas,
Florida every year, A&M every year. Then you got to face the East champion, and you're about to have to face Oklahoma and Texas. That's a lot, man. I mean, it's a lot because Alabama is one of your yearly opponents among a lot of other top 15 teams. But the biggest thing I would say is I don't know how much some coaches really consider that path and the ease of the path, and some coaches just consider the size of the program and their ability to build a good team. And I think it really depends on the personality of the individual coach, how much – you can talk about they want a challenge, but they don't. How much they want a place where they're going to win a lot because of the ease of it, and how much they want a place where they can get the best players possible.
Well, and it's really to your other point, though. It's like we're not talking about having to build up a program at, say, Michigan State to win a national championship. We're talking about Penn State. So he's already at a top program. He might get a little bit more going to LSU, but not enough. I didn't mean to offend anybody, but I don't think somebody's leaving. I don't think somebody's leaving Penn State to go to LSU. Like, I don't. Not with the current landscape as it is, even with the recruiting benefit.
Let me put it this way: if you're Lincoln Riley and you're at Oklahoma, what seems easier for you? Staying at Oklahoma and recruiting players with a team that you've already built and gotten mostly into place to fit the couple missing pieces to win your semifinal playoff game, are going to a completely different school that had a 500 record last year with a coach that left the roster with a ton of holes and like 60 scholarship players available and rebuilding that program from scratch. I mean, right. What sounds easier to you? You're not going to leave an established situation. It doesn't happen. I can't see it happening. I know LSU has a lot of money. These other programs also have a lot of money. You always end up getting an up-and-comer from the G5 ranks or at least a low-level P5. It's just extremely rare to be able to hire somebody at one of those kinds of programs.
And I do wonder with LSU's like state and university financial situation and having to pay buyouts here, how much – stomach they have for paying a top salary. They probably do. It's a football crazy part of the world, but that is something to consider. All right, so we don't make this too long. I want to touch on, maybe you pick two, I'll pick two, reasonable candidates that would be good hires for LSU that they should be excited about that are within striking distance for them. I've got two. One is Dave Aranda, who, unlike Brady, I think Aranda is a college guy. He has proven himself to be able to build. Like, one of the things we were questioning about Aranda was when he leaves for a head coaching job after being the best defensive coordinator in college football, which I still think he was at the time, can he do the program building things, the administrative things? And I think so far it's proven that he can. And I think he would be well loved. I think he would be a home run hire, just like I thought Sark was a home run hire in Texas. The other one for me is Billy Napier. I don't think he would be as home run to the LSU fans, but I'm super high on him. And I think that, I think he's going to be a good hire. I would take him over Matt Campbell all day, every day. Give me your two.
My first call is going to be Luke Fickell. And I already said that. I think he checks all the boxes you want. And a lot of people are saying, oh, he's too tied to Ohio State. I keep hearing people saying he's waiting for that job to open.
Ryan Day's doing all right there.
Yeah, like Ryan Day is not young, not an old guy, and he's doing pretty well. So I'm not sure when you think that Luke Fickell is going to get that job. The biggest danger is that he may be the number one guy at USC. I actually agree with you on Aranda. I think you get a guy in that had years and years of connections recruiting in that area. He knows the administration. He knows the staff. He can kind of pick things up, clean up stuff that he doesn't like. And I honestly have to think that he was running a lot of the show behind the scenes when they won a championship, when they were a really good program and they had a great defense. And so I think he could turn that culture around. Billy Napier, I don't know, call it gut, but I have that gut feeling that he's going to be one of those guys like, you know, like the McElwain as a head coach who did pretty well at Colorado State and then seemed really in over his head at a P5. It just, to me, he doesn't seem to have that personality presence. And I think Aranda and Fickell have that where Napier doesn't.
All right, y'all, let us know in the comments who you think would be your reasonable good hire and then who's your stretch home run hire for LSU. Lamar, we're waiting for your comment. I'm sure you will be one of the first. Thanks so much, y'all. Have a great week. God bless.